it doesn't matter whether you're Mother Teresa, you just cannot get away with saying those kind of things. And it's all alleged. I mean, the only people that know what was said were the two individuals involved and the other people involved in the other cases. But to simplify, I think what we need to understand, and if there's one, I suppose, salient point that I'd like to make today, it's not how it was intended. It was how it's perceived. And it's as simple as that. And if you're not sure, just don't say it.
You're listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent for real estate industry sales professionals, property managers, and leaders. Each episode, we bring you the best minds in business and real estate to help you list more, sell more, and elevate your results. To connect with all things Elite Agent, including the latest news, coaching, and features, subscribe at our website, eliteagent.com.
Welcome to another episode of the Elevate Podcast, where we delve into some of the most interesting minds in business and in real estate for the very best tips and strategies for you to implement to elevate your business. I'm Samantha McLean, editor of Elite Agent, and I'm joined once again by Mark Edwards.
Thanks for having me again, Sam, even though you don't have a choice. Hey, interesting minds. This is probably one of the very interesting people in the industry.
Oh, yeah. I'm talking about Doug Driscoll. So he had some of our most clicked articles of 2019.
He's not one to shy away from a bit of controversy.
Controversy? Didn't Prince have a song called... Never mind my singing. Okay, so yeah, so we invited Doug into the studio. He bought us a very nice bottle of red wine. The man is very classy. Thanks, Doug. And first of all, you know, because his articles get a lot of traction. Mm. So I was interested in what thought processes he goes through before he sticks pen on paper. Mm. Because obviously, you know, for agents out there who might be creating blog posts and things like that, you want to go through a similar thought process, because there's no point creating content unless it's going to get traction out there.
Exactly. You need to be talking to what people are interested in,
yep,
what they're talking about. And also, it's important to have a point of view.
Well, that's what I was about to say. Often, you know, and we find this on Elite Agent, people will click on a strong opinion more than they'll click on something that's a bit, you know, a bit meh.
It's always important to put forward a thought, but it's even more important to have an opinion on that thought and to be able to explain it.
Yeah, sort of give some interesting reasoning behind it, because I think people really respect that. So this was interesting. Like, there were some really touchy topics in real estate in the last 12 months. And so I thought, if I'm going to get anyone to talk about them, it'll be Doug.
It'll be Doug.
So we talked about three things which are real hot buttons in 2019. The first one was the Me Too thing. So there was quite a few cases in the media last year. We don't need to name names or go through them, but I suspect that it won't be the last and there will be more. You know, it was a good opportunity to talk to Doug about what he sees as happening and some of the steps that people need to take to ensure that that sort of fallout doesn't happen in their businesses.
And this was a multi-level conversation that you had. It can be applicable to a leader in the business. It can be applicable to somebody who's working as a practitioner in the business, or somebody who can potentially just be a witness or a bystander to these things happening.
Yep.
It is a very sensitive topic, but I think it was very eloquently unpacked.
Mm. But I think, you know, the important thing is that if you see something or know something or it's you, you need to speak up. Mm. Second topic, lead generators. So love them or hate them. Like, you know, I always believe that you should be looking at ROI on any marketing you do. And if you choose to do the lead generators and it makes you a profit, more power to you. But there are pros and cons, obviously, of using lead generators and also the data that's involved and the data that changes hands and things like that. So it was interesting to have a bit of a chat to Doug and get his thoughts on all of that.
And particularly what he is seeing happening within his group and how he's encouraging people to consider the lead generators and how they play a part in the business. For some people, they're an important part of their business. For others, it's an opportunity that is there as another tool in their kit bag.
Mm, absolutely. And thirdly, property management. So this is an area that I see is changing. And, you know, I've been kind of bleating about the subscription economy for a couple of years now. But, you know, like, I think that definitely property management is an exciting place to be. Obviously, margins are being eroded in traditional areas and consumers are demanding more choice. Mm. But I also think that that opens up greater opportunities. And so Doug and I had a bit of a chat about that as well. So these are like the hot button topics for a lot of people at the moment. So, you know, I encourage you to have a listen and have a listen to Doug's thoughts, because he is a deep thinker about these things. And yeah, obviously, if you would like to continue the conversation, get in touch with us, editor@eliteagent.com.
Absolutely. Now, there's a lot that was spoken about during this session.
Yeah.
And Doug, rightly so, has touched on a number of different avenues and a number of resources that you can draw upon if you do find yourself in need of either A, reaching out to somebody for help,
yep,
as either an individual or as a leader.
Mm-hmm.
Some great resources in there, actually, from a leadership side of things. But as usual, you've taken all of the notes and scribbled furiously afterwards.
That's it. If all you want to do is look at the notes and skip the listen, then you can do that too. EliteAgentElevate.com.
So for the people who don't want to skip the listen, we should get on with it.
We should get on with the show.
Enjoy the show.
Welcome to the podcast, Doug Driscoll.
Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure to see you here in the studio finally. We've had some good articles from you this year on EliteAgent.com. In fact, they were some of the most clicked articles, would you believe? And we have a nickname for you in the studio.
What's that?
It's Mr. Controversy.
Okay. Well, I don't court controversy, but I think it's always important sometimes to pop your head above the parapet and offer an opinion on things. But
before we sort of get into the meat of today, I just wanted to have a bit of a talk about some of the stuff that you've written. So you talked about using the term off market, which has been a hot topic this year. You had some predictions for 2020, and something that sort of popped up as number two news piece was the one that you did about the real estate industry having reached its technology intersection, which I think was quite a bit earlier in 2019. So first of all, you know, for some people who would love to be in the magazine but can't figure out what to write, how do you sit there and go, okay, this is what I'm going to write about?
I would love to say I strategize these things, but obviously I have a day job first and foremost, you know, being the managing director of Star Partners, and that keeps me pretty damn busy. But I do try to spend as much time on the coalface as possible, you know, speaking to the people that kind of matter. And I typically leave with a lot of questions, and I try to find out what their pain points are and challenges. And, you know, when I'm around the trap, certain things sort of crop up or pop up, and they're normally the source of inspiration. They're normally the things I look at and go, you know what? I think the wider audience would want to discuss this, or maybe sometimes hear my view on these things. So I don't sit down with a blank piece of paper. They just come to me kind of randomly from the ether, so to speak.
Interesting. So can we talk about a couple of them?
Please do. Yeah, love to.
So let's start with the real estate industry having reached its technology intersection. Is that still where your head's at? Have we reached a critical mass of technology that if we just throw more technology into real estate, it's not necessarily going to improve either the experience or productivity?
Slightly, yeah. I mean, what I meant by that term was I think we're very much at a crossroads. And if you look at the two sort of axes, if you like, you've obviously got the machine, the robot, artificial intelligence predominantly, and then you've obviously got the human touch points. And I think we're at that intersection on the basis that we need to fully understand and embrace what can be kind of automated and what we need to do ourselves. And I think we've become overrun somewhat with all these kind of tech players at the moment. I did a bit of a study with my own group about how many different tech providers an office on average would use in 2019. And it's in excess of 20 different operators. And, you know, what I think we almost need to do is deconstruct that somewhat and look at whether they're all actually purposeful and they actually have meaning within in each and every business. And I think a lot of time they're not. So we just need to understand that we need to double down on what the humans are good at and then obviously automate or outsource everything else.
I mean, we do it too in this business as we add stuff, we add stuff, we add stuff. But I think unless you kind of take stock every now and then to go, all right, is this really adding anything valuable or meaningful? Like then you just end up with a heap of toys in the toolbox, in the toy box.
And sometimes it's like painting a rusty car, you know. It's really important that you kind of circle back, because what was purposeful or useful maybe even 2 years ago may not be today. That's how quickly technology is moving. So it's really important to kind of, especially this time of year, sort of reflect on what you've got and then look forward to what you need.
Yeah, absolutely. And so what about this term off market? Have you spoken to Stu Benson, by the way?
He sent me a message, actually a private message, just referencing it. But yeah, it drives me crazy. Yeah. And I think it's now part of the common vernacular. But that doesn't make it right. As I say, it's an oxymoron, as I said in my release. Even at my own property at the weekend, neighbouring property, I had a chat to the agent and I sort of said, oh, which property is it? And she explained and she said, it's off market. And I bit my tongue, but I nearly said to her, what the hell are you doing here then if it's off market? So I think we've just got to get out of some of those bad habits. It can't be off market because the moment that an agreement is executed, it means it's very much on market. And I think the industry has got a propensity to use that term on the basis of a property not yet having been advertised on the portals. So they can surely come up with another term, maybe marketed quietly or pre-portal advertising, but not off market. But that's not to say the industry won't continue to do it, of course.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because I think Eddie Seaton wrote an article in the final edition of Elite Agent for 2019 about exactly that problem, because now we have a problem of how many days on market is the real number.
Yeah.
Because you've got probably a release to a buyer database, you've got a Facebook release, and then you've got a portal release. So it does muddy the water significantly.
Absolutely. And it's a really good point. And I think that should always go back to the date that the actual contract or the sales agreement was executed. That's day one, as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely. I reckon that's a good rule too. We've solved that problem. Now, there's a few others that we need to solve today. This is the reason I've called you in here, actually, because there's been a lot of controversy in different areas in the real estate industry and with people with lots of different opinions. And so I kind of want to break these down with you because you're not one to shy away from some of the tough topics. So they are, of course, let's just call it Me Too.
Yep.
Where we saw a couple of big cases of that in 2019. Lead generators, because everybody loves to talk about the interceptors and what impact they have on their businesses. And then also property management, because that's probably one of the areas that's been squeezed and squeezed and squeezed. And yet, like when we saw the market dip in 2019, everyone was once again saying, thank God for property management. And I don't know about you, but I think there's a lot of opportunity in property management.
Absolutely.
Moving into 2020. So let's go from the top. Do you think in the real estate industry that Me Too is a big problem?
Yes, I do. And by the way, you've just pulled the pin off a grenade and thrown it in my direction. Yes, I do. What I should probably do is start by prefacing, I think, the sensitivities around this subject. For me, you know, I acknowledge them. I understand, obviously, how big they are. And I think sometimes it's those sensitivities that stop us or hold us back from having a fairly open and robust discussion and conversation around it. And as you alluded to, there are two or three high-profile cases as of late. But I think if we look at it in a simplistic sense, for want of a better term, I think there are kind of two categories here. There is the ones that belong to the kind of the Me Too movement, the predatory person, the one who sets out with kind of intent or malice in mind. They're the well-documented ones, and certainly that's the genesis of the Me Too movement. And then you've got probably the second camp or the second category, which is the naive and or kind of clumsy person that kind of maybe uses this before they use that. And I think from that perspective, that's probably the most recent cases, but that's still not an excuse. You know, from my point of view, when I look at the recent cases, there's been a lot of people come out in defense of the perpetrators. And I, in some respects, understand why the people have come out and said that, oh, we shouldn't give this person a hard time or they shouldn't have lost their job. And there's almost kind of that they attribute some sort of credit system to this person and that they've done a lot of good things for the industry over time. And there's no denying that at all. But it doesn't matter whether you're this person or Mother Teresa, you just cannot get away with saying those kind of things. And it's all alleged. I mean, the only people that know what was said were the two individuals involved and the other people involved in the other cases. But to simplify, I think what we need to understand, and if there's one, I suppose, salient point that I'd like to make today, it's not how it was intended. It was how it's perceived. And it's as simple as that. And if you're not sure, just don't say it. And this kind of casual approach to it just isn't acceptable either. You know, I've heard a lot of people say, oh, you know, bloody hell, it's a bit of a nanny state. And what's wrong with all these snowflakes and all the rest of it? It's just banter. This is what I keep hearing. Well, who decides what banter is? You know, I mean, I've heard that term so many times. I'll tell you my opinion what banter is. Banter is me taking the piss out of my mate Conrad about Manchester United being crap at football at the moment. That's banter. Not me, you know, obviously using lewd and offensive language to someone about, you know, their sexuality or the body, whatever it may be. It's just not acceptable in the workplace. You know, obviously we need to understand that it wasn't acceptable 10 years ago, 20 years ago, and it's definitely not acceptable today. So I think for me, when I look at it, we need to really wake up to this. Obviously now there's more and more people coming forward and reporting these things, and good for them. And what you typically see in situations such as this is you see others get then the courage and the bravery to do the same thing. So I think moving forward, we're going to see a lot more bad before we see good. And in order to solve this problem, if we ever solve it, but certainly improve it, I think it all stems around education. I think one of the things that we're woefully lacking with our industry is firstly awareness and then education. And I think when we educate people to what is and what isn't acceptable, that is where we'll start to solve the problem.
I've been watching this really great show on Apple TV. I'm a sucker for the Apple TV Plus or whatever. There's this great show on there called Morning Wars. If anyone has watched it or has access to Apple TV, I really recommend that you do that, because it closely mirrors what you're saying, Doug, in that there is a story that the news anchor man is fired for poor behavior, for saying the wrong thing, for doing the wrong thing. But then you also see around that the people that enabled him by allowing it to happen, including some of the victims where they accepted promotions and things like that in return for keeping their mouth shut. And so, you know, like there's so many different layers to this show, and it's pretty easy to watch Steve Carell and Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon and, you know, those sorts of people in the show. But I think it really sort of does highlight some of those issues that you just touched on, which is none of it is okay, whether you're an enabler or whether you're guilty.
Yep.
It's not okay. And I mean, you know, like you could even go back to movies from the 80s, The Accused with Jodie Foster.
Yep, seen it.
You know, the people that were egging the guy on were found as guilty as the person who was committing the crime in the first place.
Yeah.
As a woman, it's hard for me to talk about.
Yeah. And I think, you know, again, I think there's definitely needs to be more men join this discussion and kind of stand up and be counted, you know, and call others out on it, really. I really admire the bravery of people who have the guts to come out and say, no, that's not on. You can't say that to me. And then take it further and report it. And I think a lot of the problem stems from, let's be clear, it's the absolute minority of our industry. I don't think it's widespread, but that's not to say that we shouldn't address it clearly. And I think for me, it stems from the journey of a real estate principal a lot of the time. And if we're looking at principals in isolation, they start off as salespeople. They do well for themselves, you know, become resentful that they have to give away part of their commission to their then boss. They up sticks, they set up camp down the road, set up their own business, and then kind of carry on doing what they're doing. And what they do then by doing that is they miss various parts. And obviously by default, you are then a leader of people. You have responsibilities and obligations towards those people. And if you were to do a straw poll amongst your readers and you were to ask the principals in particular, how many of them have actually gone out and actually upskilled and educated themselves around human resources and around anti-discrimination, harassment in the workplace, bullying, all these things, I think the number would be frighteningly low. But this is rife, you know, and this now has a voice, and it's really the responsibility of those principals. And I think most people in the workplace to really have an awareness and a knowledge and an education around this subject. And then there are no excuses. Then you can't blame ignorance. So I think certainly my advice to any of the victims watching or listening to this would be speak out, because people are listening and you will get the support. And I think the high profile cases that you alluded to have certainly demonstrated all that. The second thing would be, for those kind of principals or people in the position of leadership within the industry, join REEF. If you're not a member of the Real Estate Employees Federation, you should be. Now, they'll help you with a robust anti-discrimination and workplace harassment and policy and procedure, and then go and source some training. So if you go to training, you can go to the Human Rights Commission for training. You can go to the Anti-Discrimination Board for training. There are numerous entities out there that will help you with this stuff. But we've overlooked it, and it's time that we really tackle it head on and start having some conversations and taking accountability and responsibility for our own words and actions. It's as simple as that. Because I know one of those characters involved in those high profile cases, and I don't think the person's a bad human being at all. I think actually from what I know of them, not personally, but professionally, seems like a really decent kind of guy. And I'm sure that he massively regrets what he said, but the reality is he still said it, allegedly. But if he did, unfortunately, it's just the way of the world. You've got to face the music. And we're going to see, as I say, more of this before we start seeing less of it.
Yeah. And I think this is where we've been saying it for a couple of years now. Emotional intelligence is the number one skill. So if you're a leader and you're listening to this and you're thinking, God, I hope this never happens to me. Mm. That's the other place to upskill, isn't it? Is actually in your emotional intelligence quotient. Do they call it EQ?
EQ, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about this subject recently, and I was kind of thinking, who is the kind of judge of what's acceptable in society? And I think if anyone's sort of seeking some sort of barometer, I suppose, being a male, and it predominantly is men, let's face it, I would ask them to challenge themselves, some of their words and actions. If they've got a partner or wife, how would their wife or partner perceive what they've said and done? Because if they're kind of happy and content with it, then the likelihood is perhaps there's nothing wrong with it. But if they were up in arms about certain things or behaviours, then it's fair to say the rest of the world will be as well. But I can't stress enough, being in a position of leadership is a position of privilege, and we should never abuse that.
Well said. Let's move on to lead generators, or the Lisa B calls them the interceptors.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, good.
Because, you know, like, well, there are a few of them around there that kind of intercept Google and now selling leads back to customers. And it's been happening since the dawn of time, particularly in America, actually. Zillow and people like that, they're just getting more and more revenue out of lead generation. So what is your view on the lead generators out there at the moment, and what should agents really be doing to keep their clients as their own clients and win more business through referrals?
Well, I think in a general sense, I think it's tantamount to throwing chips to seagulls at the moment. But I think if we go back to the very genesis of these organizations, we need to understand as an industry why they ever emerged in the first place. And they emerged because there was an opportunity there. And that opportunity was because probably agencies weren't working hard enough to go out and prospect and find new business. We were very slow on the uptake in terms of the digital space. And that's why we've allowed them to kind of put their toe in the door. That was probably 4 or 5 years ago now that we start seeing them become more prevalent. And my fear or worry at that time, and I've been vocal about this for some time now, was that the likes of Open Agent and Local Agent Finder, they were just kind of just scratching the surface. My fear was always when the likes of REA or Domain entered that space. And sure enough, you know, at the start of this year, that's exactly what happened with REA. And I don't know the exact numbers, but I think it's about 15, 16,000 properties have transacted now via their agent match product already. And I guess if I'm looking medium to long term, what I'm worried about there is just how much of a percentage of the market they can really capitalize, and just what impact that has on agents' margins and real estate businesses as a whole. And I think what we need to do is kind of get back to basics and start upskilling ourselves in around the digital space, doing all the things that they're doing. Now, we'll never have the budgets. I understand that, but we can't be complacent.
Although they were the last to the table with this, do you think that they probably looked at their competition and said, well, hang on a second, I need to be a part of this too?
Yes, definitely. I mean, one thing that, and again, this is not criticism of anybody. My concern was always the likes of REA, because they've got shareholders to answer to. And by answering to, I mean maximizing their returns. So they will see fit to do what they need to do, within reason, of course, to maximize those returns and return the best profit. So you're absolutely right. They were the last of the table, but they have already done quite a lot in a very small window of time, and they will only expand on this. And the worry or concern that I have in regards to the likes of REA is that they are a national institution. Okay, we may not be their biggest fan of as an industry, but if you look at the general public or populace, they love REA. Why wouldn't they? You know, they're a one-stop shop. You know, you can go there to find your property. You can go there to get mortgages now. They've got content coming out of their ears, all of which is very useful. And also they're a trustworthy source. Whereas our industry, as is well documented, is amongst the least trusted industries in the country. So when you've got someone essentially implying they'll do the heavy lifting and they'll go and do the sort of the agent search for you, and it's all free of charge for the public anyway, why wouldn't you utilize that service? And what really, I suppose, got me thinking about this a lot more this year was the fact that I was asked to come in and consult with a major international bank who are actually looking at investing in REA because of this new product. And we're talking serious investors here. You know, we're talking potentially millions of dollars. Now, when they're looking at that and they're doing the due diligence on it, clearly they're not daft. They know what they're doing and they know what they're looking for. So it's clearly a much bigger space than perhaps we even realize it is. And I think it's got serious legs on it as well.
So with your Star Partners hat on, how are you coaching your team to prepare for the future, which involves all sorts of lead generators?
I'm never going to dictate to any of our offices, you can't use them. But what I am doing is airing a note of caution, and I have been now for some time. And what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to explain to them the economics of accepting these leads. And I think when you bring it back down to simple economics, if you're giving away, in some instances, up to 20% of the sales fee, you're hardly making any profit at all on that. And if you took that money and you reallocated that money by way of kind of marketing expenditure, getting out into your market, being hyperlocal, being all the things that all these trainers tell us to be, you're going to basically get more interest, more listings as a result of that. So I'm not telling anyone not to do it. I'm, you know, certainly wouldn't say it to my own group, and I certainly wouldn't say that to any of your viewers. But what I would do is I'd say, what does next year look like? What does 3 years from now look like? What does 5 years look like? Do you even care? You know, it's one of these things. So it's just getting the grey matter working, getting them to think about it and understand that every action has that reaction and there's certain ramifications by accepting leads in the first place.
It comes down to a marketing equation, doesn't it, really? So it's return on marketing here and return on marketing that. If you know, X plus Y plus Z, your social media plus your letterbox drops plus your all the rest of it, that adds up to 20% of your commission or less, then you know where the ROI is. Like you're investing in your brand rather than, I suppose, letting somebody else be in control of your destiny.
Oh, definitely. And understanding the numbers and understanding your ROI, you know, and being very morphological or forensic in your approach when looking at those numbers, because in the vast majority of cases up and down the country, I think most agencies would be lucky to break a 20% profit on a sale. Also, for those principals watching, if an agent accepts one of those leads, then obviously the split then that needs to be adjusted accordingly. That needs to come out of the split altogether, in my view, because otherwise, like I said, you may even be running a loss.
Yeah, that's a bit of a sobering thought too, like depending on where your splits lie. And I mean, because we've got some providers at the moment who are 90%.
Yeah.
Split.
Like, well, all of a sudden you're paying 20% to an intermediary. Like I said, you're not making any money at all.
Yeah, that's a very tricky one. Moving into 2020, what are your favourite marketing methods? Like if I gave you $5,000 a month to invest on marketing a real estate brand, where would you go?
Heavily on social media at the moment, heavily. But my method would probably differ from a lot of the agents you are seeing at the moment. We were having this conversation off air beforehand. The thing about social media is kind of everyone's an expert. And that's where it massively differs from the traditional media, I suppose. But my view would be to become an authority in your local area. And we hear that all the time. What does that actually look like? That looks like delivering tangible, purposeful content. The average consumer or vendor moves every, 10 and a half, 11 years, whatever it is. No one piece of marketing collateral is going to prompt them into doing something there and then. So it's a, you know, again, it's cliche, but it's the long game, making sure that you're establishing a relationship. Whether or not you actually know them or know their name or where they live anyway, but if they're getting your content and it's good content and it actually adds value to their life or their situation, that is where you're then winning. But it takes a multitude of touch points as well, you know, and it takes a hell of a lot of patience, I think it's fair to say. But relationships are built on information, not promotion, and agents need to understand that. I mean, rightly so, a lot of them are very proud about some of their achievements and they're there beating their chests and talking about, you know, record prices or the amount of people they've got through an open or whatever it may be. I would pose a question, does the end viewer actually give to, you know, what's about that? And I don't actually think they do. Whereas if all of a sudden you start talking about things that relate to enhancing the value of their property by way of tips and pointers and whatever it may be, that adds value to them and indeed their lives.
Yeah, that's what I always say, is make it about them, not about you.
Absolutely.
Apart from the odd testimonial.
Of course. Yeah. And I mean, even the testimonial, you know, that's the peer-to-peer influencing is very much alive and well. So make it natural, you know, don't make it sound as it's forced. You know, testimonials, I always joke, a lot of them now you see, it's like one of those kind of ISIS hostage videos, you know, where you sort of see someone like the deer in the headlights and it's almost as if someone's there with a gun just out of shot, saying, say I'm a really good agent almost. So I think just make it natural and just let them do the talking. Just ask a simple open-ended question and then just shut up and then see what flows. And then that content is the content that the other vendor in the area is going to see and believe.
Yeah. It's interesting too, you know, like I went to a seminar this year that wasn't a real estate seminar, but they did say that the faster you can get Google reviews, the faster Google will elevate you to the top of the search results. Mm. So for you guys out there who are thinking there's no way to beat the interceptors, I would give you a nudge and a wink and say, get as many Google reviews in as short a space of time as you can.
That's a great point. And I know what some people are going to think when they hear that. So I'm going to give people a little tip, if I may.
Yep.
Because I encountered this only recently myself with an office. I think one of the reasons why the industry gravitates towards the likes of Rate My Agent is because really it's a testimonial platform, not a review platform. Mm. When was the last time you saw a bad review on Rate My Agent? You know, it's unicorn tears. It doesn't happen. However, as you said, Google recognizes Google. And one of the challenges offices or agents face is that if the vendor hasn't got a Google account, then obviously they can't establish a Google review. Get their permission, their blessing, and then just basically create an account on their behalf. It's as simple as that. You know, just a random series of numbers and names, whatever it may be. And then there you go. But as long as you're getting their blessing or permission in the first place to do so, it's a really easy way to do that. Otherwise, it's not going to happen.
Actually, there is, I can't think of the name of it now, but I will include it in the show notes. There's an actual tool out there now. I saw it randomly on AppSumo or one of those Sumo sites where you can get somebody to type in a review and then you can kind of copy and paste it into other platforms.
Perfect. Even better.
I can't remember the name of it now, but I promise you guys I will put it in the show notes. But yeah, look, the thing is too with Rate My Agent, the trouble is that why do you want to get a review? And here's where we could probably have a long, robust debate, Doug, is that I want to get a review because I want to make my business better.
Yeah.
You know, like fundamentally, that's what it is. And so if I say to you, Doug, can you just give me a review on Rate My Agent and say something nice? To me, that's not saying I want to improve.
Slip service.
Yeah. That's just saying give me that. Like I much prefer, I remember there was a platform a while ago. I think they were bought out, but it was LJ Hooker used to use the platform and it was really about actually surveying your client and figuring out where you could have done better, where you did really well, and then tweaking that service to improve it. And I think that's a problem too. Not only is it a problem that you've got to review people on several sites, but it's a problem that I think people are being reviewed and taking the review feedback, not for the right reasons, but for the wrong reasons.
Yeah. And I think you're spot on. I think Rate My Agent is a marketing tool. You know, I think that's the best way to describe it. It's a marketing tool. It's not, as you said, a vehicle for self-improvement. And none of us, me included, like negative feedback, but it's that that defines you. It's that what
makes
improves
you stronger.
Oh, once I get out of my own ego, when someone's giving me negative feedback, I go away, I self-reflect, and I actually try to improve whatever it is. It's not easy to hear, though, granted, but we've got to stop fishing for compliments. And actually, you're right. Get genuine, tangible feedback, the good, bad, and the ugly, because that's what's going to improve us.
Yeah. Now, the third thing I want to talk to you about is property management and where you think property management is going in 2020. So property management, again, seems to have sort of found itself in a bit of an interesting place. Years ago, when I first started writing about real estate, we had property management in the back of the magazine. And then the property managers kind of said, we hate this because we're in the back of the office too. We don't want to be in the back of the magazine. So we changed that, shifted things around. Property management came to the front of the office. And then property management kind of went a little bit backwards again with margins being squeezed and people like your bonds are coming into the market, things like that. What role do you think in amongst all the discounters and all the tech platforms and all of that sort of thing is property management going to play in 2020?
It's good timing because we had a brilliant session only last week with Fiona Blaney. Shout out Fiona Blaney. And what I love about Fiona is that, like myself, she doesn't shy away from things and she kind of says it how she sees it. And she kind of deconstructed property management somewhat and built it back up again for 2020 and beyond. And she was really challenging our group around, what do you actually do? What is your role or purpose kind of in the process? And then there was a question around, what do landlords want? And people kind of went through 10, 12 different things. And I'm kind of sat there in a corner as an investor myself. And I just piped up and said, you know, to maximize my return. And I think sometimes we forget that about investors.
Keep big dog out of my property.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's a tale from another year.
That's another story.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we won't discuss that one. But it's interesting in terms of understanding what we do. And I think not every landlord is built the same. And I think that understanding landlords' needs, you know, are they an accidental landlord, an intentional landlord? One of the things I hear all the time is delivering value. Well, what I perceive as value and what you see as value is very different. As a landlord myself, for me, value would be almost forgetting I own the property at all, quite frankly. Yet for you, it might be, well, I want to know that it's being cared for and tended and all these different things. So I think we've got to kind of get back to what our role and purpose is. I also think product knowledge is a big one. And again, Fiona alluded to this around, we've got to become not experts, but certainly more knowledgeable on things like depreciation, even things like insurance, things like what the best mortgage rates are and so on and so forth. We've got to have these kind of frank conversations around, do you stick or twist? You know, do you sell or do you hold? Because that's something that's kind of taboo in property management. Oh, you can't possibly talk to the landlord about selling. Well, why not? Because 8 out of 10 times they probably do sell, and they sell to another landlord or investor. You know, you get the com from the sale, and you obviously recuperate the or retain the management. So it just makes sense to me, these things.
We've had a guest on the podcast. His name's Tyrone Shum. He's got a great podcast called Property Investory, and he has about 40,000 downloads a month, like a lot. And all he does is interviews different investors on their different strategies. Mm. And if you are in property management, like, you know, Tyrone's my mate, obviously, but I think you should, you know, like have a listen to a few of those episodes, because investors don't come in a one size fits all. They come in buy, hold,
yep,
sell, renovate. Even this model of shared investing now is gaining ground. There's people involved in what I'd call iRenting, guaranteeing rent. Yep. Like, there's all these different sorts of model around, and consumers are all over it. And yep, if you're not all over it,
you get left behind. By way of introduction, when I was introducing Fiona last week, I was saying that it was Darwin that said it wasn't the strongest of species that will survive, it's the one that's most able to adapt. And I think that's exactly what we've got to do. So rather than kind of dismissing and poo-pooing these kind of disruptors, we need to actually look at what they're doing, what it is they're doing well, and actually learn from it and actually take elements and actually implement it into our own businesses. Because you're absolutely right. The consumer now has expectations way above and beyond perhaps sometimes what we even realize. So I think let's really learn from some of these disruptors, because they're doing some really, really good things. And we can kind of stand there and say, well, they're not going to succeed. They are succeeding. And because of that, if we're not careful, we'll become extinct. So it's really important that we remain open-minded and we adapt technology, change, embrace it, implement it.
And so what are some of the things that you're thinking about in terms of star partners and property managers? Because you've got a couple of big rent roles, particularly out in Sydney's West. So what are they kind of thinking in terms of making themselves more efficient and staying cost competitive and that sort of thing? Like, what are some of the things that they're doing?
Well, certainly one of the things that they're trying to do is offer more for less, which is obviously incredibly challenging in any element of business. But what they're doing a lot now is doubling down on education as well. So I've just alluded to the fact that the property manager as such morphs not just from a property manager. We've got to stop using the term property manager. It makes these people sound like caretakers. It's more of a shift in emphasis and shift in thinking more than anything else, rather than an implementable action. And changing someone's thinking is a very difficult thing to try to achieve. Again, I'll go back to what Fiona was saying. She was talking about client managers opposed to actual property managers. You know, I've always believed it's asset management. That's what it essentially is. So being broader in what we do, not to focus or be drawn down into the problem element of property management. And let's face it, there's a hell of a lot of problems there and a number of headaches, but understanding and seeing the kind of bigger picture. Also for principals as well to educate and upskill themselves. You know, if you were to go to, let's say, an ARIC, for argument's sake, you'll see a number of real estate principals at ARIC. You'll see far less at its equivalent being ARPM, of course. So what I typically find is going back to that journey of a principal, most of them obviously are salespeople that have kind of stepped up. This is your biggest asset. This is your retirement fund. You've got to get in there. Don't just pass it off to somebody else to kind of look after. You've got to get it in there, and you've got to know every last aspect or element of that business. So in that, if, say, a property manager was unwell one day, you could step in and do their job. Because once you start doing that, you start realizing, hang on a minute, why do we do that? Why do we do this? Why do we have this technology? There's a better, more efficient alternative out there. And I don't think enough principals actually do that enough. You know, go in, get their hands dirty and educate and upskill themselves on property management. It's very foreign to them, isn't it, in many ways?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there's no excuses with ARIC this year. If you're going, I think ARIC and ARPM are actually together.
Oh, are they? So, okay, yeah. there's a plug.
We'll, there's a, yeah. Yeah, I know. Okay, let's end on some actionable tips for the listeners, because we love getting actionable tips. And since I've been taking show notes, I try to get a minimum of 6 to 8 links. It's my personal KPI. So, all right, top agents at Star Partners, what are they focusing on right now?
Being hyperlocal, educating people, as I touched upon earlier.
So really going deep.
Really going deep, understanding their role, their purpose, and who they serve. And that's essentially what they need to see themselves as. Another thing that they're sort of coming to terms with is that they're content providers. I mean, again, I read your magazine, I've seen the podcast. There's numerous people who have been before me who have said the same thing, understanding that they're content providers, but also understanding what they're actually good at. So I've seen a number of them kind to trying to do it themselves. You need to double down on being a salesperson, you know, listing, selling. I would introduce a third party who's an expert in that field to aid and assist you in that respect. So absolutely, being local, talking about local matters, getting out and about, meeting people, but also really understanding the digital space and getting third parties to come in and aid and assist you in that respect.
What's the best piece of actionable advice you've ever been given about real estate or business?
I suppose it centers around time, really. You know, don't suffer fools. Appreciate and value your time. It is the most precious of all commodities. Use it wisely and kind of get to the point. I have a propensity to be verbose sometimes. So the old adage is, why use 100 words when you can use 20? So kind of cutting to the chase, getting to the point, and doing so not because you're rude or obnoxious, just because you then create more time to do maybe more productive things in the day.
Speaking of productivity, what is your best productivity tip or your favorite productivity tool at the moment?
I'm quite old school in that respect. So I work like a whirlwind. So I may not work as long hours as some other people in the industry, but boy, oh boy, when I'm on it, I'm on it. And I think one of the things is you just got to cut out the noise. It's as simple as that. Don't get distracted. Even something as simple as batching emails, for argument's sake. You know, we're very impulsive, responsive to any last little distraction because we almost welcome the distraction in many ways. So just tunnel vision. And that's what you need to do. And you can do that, you know, maybe 2 or 3 times a day in bursts, so to speak. But yeah, just eliminating distractions. And we all know what our own distractions are. So just get away from them as best you can.
Good advice there. Any books? What's your favorite book that you've ever read?
Now, I'm going to sound like a right dummy here. I actually haven't read a book for probably about 5 years.
Oh, really?
And that's not to say I'm unread or unintelligent. I actually probably spend up to, anywhere between 45 minutes to an hour and a half every day seeking information. I have a hunger for information. I have a hunger for self-improvement. I read all the time. I just don't read books. So I listen to a lot of podcasts. I read a lot of articles. Talking of books, I read a lot of serialization of books. You know, bit lazy, but it's a shortcut about finding out the juicy parts. You know, I'm somebody who just fills my head with as much as I possibly can. If you ever need an extra team member on your pub trivia quiz, give us a shout. But yeah, I mean, I think there's also a number of people perhaps watching this who don't read books themselves and they probably feel less intelligent because of that. Don't. As long as you still have the desire to go out and self-improve and learn, that's fine. You don't have to read a book. And I think there's also some people watching this who say they read countless books and probably don't either, by the way.
Yeah. I wasn't reading a lot of books till I started hosting a podcast. Then everyone seemed to have a book that they wanted me to talk about on the podcast. Yeah. So I've read about 20 this year.
Which is ironic because I used to read books until podcasts existed. So the antithesis.
Occupational challenge. Yeah. So this has been super fun anyway, Doug. Next time we've got something controversial to pull apart, I'll be here.
With bells
get straight on
the
phone.
That's right.
First of all, thank you for sharing your knowledge today and thank you for sharing your thoughts. I'm sure that they've been helpful to some people who are kind of thinking about these things but too afraid to talk about it. If there's one thing that you want everyone to remember from everything we've talked about today, what would it be?
Because it probably doesn't get enough or as much airtime as the other topics we've discussed, going back to the obviously the obligations and responsibilities within a workforce, it may sound as if I'm kind of bashing principles here. I'm not, because actually it permeates throughout any organization. And it sounds a bit OTT, but just be kind to each other, you know, and just think twice about certain words or actions or behaviors. Also, for those people in a position of authority or leadership, it might not be you, but it could be someone else within your organization as well. But if you see or hear it, you need to stamp it out. You can't tolerate it, because if something sinister is said or done, and then obviously that's then reported by you not doing anything, you become complicit yourself. So I think, like I said, we just need to be acutely aware of this, and we need to kind of nip it in the bud and cut it at every level. Even if you're somebody who works in an office, not a principal or manager, you hear or see someone doing something, don't be scared to say something. Stop it. It has to be cut out altogether. It's just not acceptable in any walk of life. It's certainly not acceptable in real estate, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's right. And always remember that change starts with you.
Correct. Absolutely. Yeah.
So never was anything more true. Mm. Doug Driscoll, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
To connect with all things Elite Agent, including the latest news, coaching and features, subscribe at our website, eliteagent.com.